This is Forum. I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director, going to be talking to the former counselor and citizen advocate, Teresa Staley. Earlier, the last time I talked to you, I think about half a year or so ago, was the most downloaded program of that quarter, and a lot of people were interested in what you're doing. And I guess, first of all, you're well known for your flowers, and this rain has really kind of perked things up a bit.
Oh, wow. John, this rain has just been fabulous, and we've been spared with from having damaging storms in the Sioux Falls area anyway, for the most part. But, gee, we just had some beautiful soaking rains, and my flowers are rejoicing. I'm rejoicing. It's just glorious.
They're blooming.
They're blooming, and yes, alive and vibrant as our souls having that moisture come.
Well, your term ended in July last year, so what's been the big adventure that you've had since then?
Well, John, I absolutely had a big adventure that a lot of people in our community might not be aware of. But yes, my city council term ended last July, a year ago. And along with that, with the COVID hitting, my employment dried up. I've directed a church choir for 20 years at St. Therese. The bishop said no more choirs, so that was over. My piano students were uncertain about returning because of COVID concerns, and of course, we hadn't had school, so that employment dried up. I still had, USF was still going. We were teaching, had to do virtual teaching with that. But there were many endings for me last July, and those endings led to an opportunity of a lifetime that I have dreamt about. In my time in Sioux Falls and in my time in teaching, I have been able to work with the most talented, privileged children in our community, teaching music. And these children, you know, they have so much, and they're wonderful to work with. But through the years, I've always had a desire in my heart to give back to the Native American children. And I wasn't sure how that would materialize in my life. This year, after that, everything collapsed in July, I found a job opening in McLaughlin, South Dakota, on the Standing Rock Indian Reservation, teaching elementary music. It's 330 miles away. They offered me the job, and I grew up in Mobridge, which is 30 miles from this school. So I was able to go and rent a house in Mobridge, and I still came back to Sioux Falls, but I was able to commute back and forth to the Standing Rock school, McLaughlin. And when I, this was the most challenging thing I've ever experienced, but John, it was the most wonderful year of my life. And when I got to the school, they had shut it all down because of COVID. Of course, the reservations were hit harder than a lot of places because many of the children are living with their elders. And, you know, if those people would get sick and compromised, those children would have nothing. So I get to the school and there's no children. And there's no materials to work with. So I had to create a video, like a TV show, every week to send to an audience that I didn't know of these children. I had to create my own materials, my own curriculum. I got so educated on technology. It was just like amazing. I think I became younger in the experience of being that challenged. So I was creating these lessons, and in the midst of this, I discovered a thing called bucket drumming. Have you ever heard of that?
I see it sometimes on the sidewalk on big cities where people just take a pail and start beating on it.
Amen. Okay, so that is a big thing in our nation with elementary and middle school kids. You get a 5-gallon pail, you turn it upside down, get a pair of drumsticks, and you can work on the rim or on the sides, click the sticks in the air, and accompany any kind of music that you want. So I got this idea, and I contacted Runnings in Mobridge, Ace Hardware in Mobridge, and Napa in McLaughlin, and they donated 150 5-gallon pails with their logo on it. And then some friends of mine I used to teach with in Eureka, South Dakota, bought 100 sets of drumsticks for these kids. So I was able to, in January, I delivered a set of drumsticks and a bucket to every third, fourth, and fifth grader on that reservation. I saw the whole area, all these different towns, villages, districts. I saw where every child lived. I understand where they were coming from. I delivered it to them, and then I did this video teaching them different maneuvers with it. When they did come back to school, John, it was so fabulous. I worked them hard. And, you know, I'm persistent. I'm persistent in education as well. I don't give up until we get it right. But we learned these routines, and in May, we brought the kids out to the football field, and we did a fabulous concert. And they accompanied We Will Rock You, Old Town Road, and then I created a song. We did those with all sorts of complicated rhythms, and they were together. One little boy said, in the midst of it, he said, "I have never felt so alive."
Well, native drum beating is part of their heritage.
Exactly. Yeah. But coming together and doing this type of rhythm, mm-hmm. isn't anything that they had done. So I was teaching them new things that way.
Well, like I say, what you can do with a 5-gallon pail. When I was their age, I was blowing it 20 feet in the air with a cherry bomb on the 4th of July. So that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of uses for it. But this drum beating is kind of a fun. Anybody can really do it and learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and also for the concert, I was always the challenge. I learned so much about what our native people are challenging and challenged with and where they've come from. I grew up in Mobridge. So Sitting Bull, we had a monument to Sitting Bull. But I was able to learn so much about his relatives and where, everything that they've gone through. I empathize with them immensely. But I was always trying to tie their culture into, new things or things that are on the outside world. And so for the concert, I had the Lakota drum song that was performed by a native teacher. But I taught every kid the Star Spangled Banner, and they all sang it. And, wow, I think that's such a fabulous song. And so that's the challenge to me of as we work with our native citizens, that we have to respect where they've been and gently hold out a hand to help them go step into the future as well.
With COVID, was it difficult crossing the reservation boundaries?
No, this was Standing Rock, so they did not have that barrier. What's it? Roadblock. The roadblock. That was the Cheyenne reservation, which was right off Highway 12. So you couldn't go into Timber Lake and over to Eagle Butte that way. So, yeah, they were even more stringent.
Well, being a flower, a Pochiando, there's one thing about the Rosebud Reservation. If you ever go to the Black Hills, don't take the interstate. Go south and take the road through the Rosebud and the other reservations, because there's a lot of beauty in the natural, terrain and flowers and growth that there is down there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and there's a lot of beauty up around Mobridge, too. Mm-hmm. It is. It's rugged. But the places where they live are remote. They don't have a lot of services, and it's there. It's a challenge, but it was so rewarding, and it was just so wonderful to be able to be there and lift them up. And we did artwork. I taught them about Beethoven and about classical music, and they were so eager to learn.
50 years ago, we're talking to Teresa Staley, a former city councilor and citizen advocate, who has a big adventure in the reservations in the last year. Back in the 70s, I used to do disco dances in Flandreau at the Flandreau Indian School and down in Marty at the Marty Indian School. And, it was just before they started having casinos. And when the casinos, like in Flandreau, opened up, all of a sudden they started getting tennis shoes. They started getting uniforms. They started getting something. They didn't have anything before mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But I guess we should be careful that we say, well, now they got these casinos, they don't have to worry about it. it's still a lot of poverty.
Oh, yes. And you know, what a, it's just such a stark contrast between what we have in Sioux Falls. Because, you know, on the south end of town, I mean, it's just, it blows my mind that the wealth and prosperity we see, and the huge homes, and we, I mean, there's so much materialistically. And then you go out to this reservation, and there's nothing. There's nothing. And these children are so appreciative of anything that you give to them. And how could I not give to them? And I have friends in Sioux Falls that were very generous and wanting to help. I had hoped to do some piano lessons with them. And, I mean, people are willing to donate books. And so it's my heart goes out to those instances where you can really touch someone and make a difference.
What did they have for, you know, they had, most kids are living with their elders. I suppose they had dogs, you know, or what did they have that they could care about?
Well, many dogs and cats. The kids loved mm-hmm. pets. Yeah, so we would talk about that. I showed them pictures of my cats, and they loved that. And, you know, unfortunately, there is a drug issue there. And, of course, alcohol is a struggle. So my thought with these children is they're the hope for the future. You know, if you can help them to understand that they can do anything they want to do, they can achieve it if they make good choices and grab these opportunities. We Kello Land had a segment on Peyton Saltis from Pine Ridge. He was going with the New York Jets. And I took that link and I showed it to those fourth and fifth graders. And those boys were just watching it. You know, when you see, oh, yeah, we can go, we can do this. Billy Mills, I got a clip of him, showed that to them. He was suicidal when he was young. You know who I'm talking about. And to say, you know, this guy's, he was at the bottom, and he made it. That's what they need to be encouraged. And if I could make an impact on one child, it's worth it to go spend my time there.
The reservation, what can people do? I think, first of all, I'm kind of thinking in the back of my mind, you know, I've got a bunch of old technology, old tablets and stuff like mm-hmm. that I don't use anymore because you got to have the latest one, you know. But do they have internet? Do they have access?
Well, that was a big thrust because we didn't meet with the kids for over half the year. So mm-hmm. they were in their homes and they hadn't come. They had been out of school since March before. So the school scrambled to get them laptops, and WRT, the provider, gave free internet service to the people out there. But driving from Mobridge to McLaughlin every day, there's no internet. I can't get the cell service. Mm-hmm. No cell service in the school. So there are challenges as far as the just accessing the technology. But we did hit a lot of the kids. We tried to get 100% of the kids hooked up. And the teachers were doing Zoom with them, but it was so hard because they're in their homes, and it was a challenge for the staff at McLaughlin, too. It was hard not to actually have the kids there.
Speaking with Teresa Staley, where did you live in McLaughlin?
Oh, I rented a house in Mobridge.
Okay.
And that was a God thing because there were no homes for sale. And actually, when I put the word out, I was coming. I had a job to old family friends. We left Mobridge in 1975, my senior year in high school. My dad worked for Wells Fargo back then. It was First National Bank. He got transferred. But I put the call out that I was coming in. Oh, there were no houses available. And the morning of my interview, a lady, 84-year-old friend, said, call this number. And there might be a house. And I drive over to this house. This guy was just getting ready to leave to go fishing. I get out of the car. Now, I'm going to say what he said. He said, it's you. What the hell is wrong with those people in Sioux Falls? Now, that's the quote. And here this guy had followed my whole career. He loved me. And we go into this house he had totally renovated. And he was hanging on to sell it. And he ended up renting it to me. And he allowed me to bring my two cats with. And it was right by the river. So it was just, it was such a wonderful experience. They gave me a bed, he and his wife, and a card table and a chair. And I made the decision not to have a TV. So it was a quiet, it was like a retreat. Spiritually, I grew more from this time there that I could have ever imagined. It was such a renewal, a healing, a rejuvenation. It's just a fabulous mountaintop experience in so many ways.
How far was your commute?
30 minutes.
Okay, tell us what you see in that 30 minutes. What do you see in the countryside?
Well, you see Highway 12, that's a two-lane road that has steep ravines along it. We'd see antelope and deer. And when I got there, the Missouri River was full. But the skyline and the sunsets, I took a lot of photos and put them on Facebook, but beautiful sunsets and cloud lines. It's gorgeous. But as the winter went on, it was a drought. I mean, the Missouri River was down many feet. It's a very stark lifestyle out there, West River. You know, the ranchers there's white ranchers. They're tough. It's a hard life. And then the native people, they've got it tough. So it was just a whole different environment and culture. I made friends with native people. I was able to attend Mass in a town called Kennel, which is one of the towns that we service in the school. And in that Catholic church, they have an altar built out of a tree trunk. And the tabernacle is a teepee. And so it was just, there's just so many neat cultural things.
It's a part of South Dakota a lot of people don't know anything about. Teresa's Daily, you're back now living in your house with all of your different grasses and flowers and everything's on the boulevard and your whole backyard.
Yes.
Are you going to go back to the reservation, or what are you going to do?
Well, at this point, I'm not prepared to say what I'm going to be doing. I'm still kind of considering options.
Well, there's an election coming up. Are you going to run?
And that, you know, John, I've learned you never say never. I'm still active. I watched all the council meetings. I paid attention to what was going on. I think we still need people to stand up for the rights of the citizens. And I have already done that in several instances. I will always do that. I think we're called to give back to those who don't have anything. We're called to give to help them.
Well, you went down to the last city commission meeting. What went on there?
Well, my latest thing I'm concerned about is the mosquito spraying. And I'm very appreciative that we have, we are spraying for mosquitoes. I understand West Nile is a concern. But it was always our understanding that they started spraying at dusk. Mm-hmm. And that protected people, for one thing, but it also protected the beneficial insects, bees and butterflies, things flying around that are hunkered down at a certain time for bed, so we're not going to hit them. And the mosquitoes are starting to become more active at dusk. And so I was surprised on Tuesday, June 21st, the longest day of the year, the summer solstice, when the mosquito truck came by at 8 o'clock. PM. And so I texted the mayor and asked him about it. He didn't respond. And then on the 28th, like a week later, they came by again. And I put it on Facebook and I started hearing from people who had great concerns. One lady had her kids at the playground in a park and they came by and sprayed her kids. And so I did speak at the council meeting, but in the midst of that, I called Denise Patton, who is the spraying supervisor, and she told me that on the bike trails, they don't spray till after 10 because there's people out riding their bikes. Downtown, they don't spray till it's dark because people are outside enjoying things. And I said, why can't we have the same consideration in residential areas? And she said the protocol is to spray from dusk to dawn. But apparently there's like a budgetary issue and maybe people don't want to work at night. And so they're starting to do it earlier, as even 7 o'clock. And so I'm challenging the mayor and the city council to find some money in the budget and to work on creating resources and personnel that can do this service, taxpayer service, starting at dusk.
It is harder to find people to work in Sioux Falls right now. When the Amazon opens up, it's going to be interesting to see what that does. Hopefully it doesn't increase our property taxes. But talking to former city councilor, city advocate, your mentor was Kermit, and you've had some good experience with Kermit in just the last few weeks.
Oh, yes. On Friday, it'll be a week and a half ago, they interred Kermit's ashes at the new State Veterans Cemetery. And I have to say thank you to former Councilor Rex Rolfing and current Councilor Rick Kiley for their leadership in getting that state cemetery going. I was on the council at the time, and of course, we were all very supportive of that. It was kind of, there was a back and forth going on with the state, you know, to get the details ironed out. But we went out there, Kermit's family invited me to come, and it was so nice. They gave him a military salute, and they have a shelter there where you can have services. And I just think it's going to be a fabulous asset for Sioux Falls in this area.
Well, I know you've been keeping an eye on the city commission. How do you, they moved the citizen input to the end. How do you feel that's...
That's a sin, in my opinion. I fought to keep that at the beginning of the meeting.
It's kind of like I felt, okay, yeah, I expect that to happen when Teresa leaves.
Well, they waited till I left, and then they did that. Yes, and the mayor and I had worked out when he first got elected. We had a compromise that we cut it from the 5 minutes down to 3 minutes, and limit it to a half hour of input. So I thought that was working just fine where it was at the beginning of the meeting, and then I left, and then they quickly made a motion to shove it to the back. I think it was a 4-4 vote. The mayor broke the tie. So that is something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, we need to be doing more citizen input, more listening to the citizens. There seems to be this effort to shut people out. Everything's okay. We know what we're doing. You know, don't worry about it. My energy will always be to do more listening, more engaging. I talked at the meeting about the new chief of police being sworn in, and I said to him, we need to have more town halls like we did a few years ago. We've got this violence thing happening. People want to be heard, and they want to see you face to face. They want to see that the mayor is there. They want to see that the police department is in their neighborhood. They want to know who you are.
Well, there's new people to Sioux Falls, and the younger generation sometimes has new ideas, but the elders are saying, wait a minute, we've already looked at those things, and there's problems in that area. But yet the new people feel like they've got new ideas.
Sometimes I think we have a culture of closed-mindedness. I did it with snow gates for years. Mm-hmm. You know, I brought that up. We can't do that. You know, it's a kind of a can't-do attitude instead of a can-do attitude. We've got lots of good ideas in our community. We need to be finding ways to listen to people and engage with them. And let me just say, a former mayor, Mike Huther, he and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, but I have to admire that he did those listening and learning sessions. He actually got out and engaged people. And I admire him for doing that. Because it's not easy always to be with constituents. Sometimes they may say uncomfortable things to you.
Well, Teresa, you may or may not run for re-election, but for somebody who would run for the next election, what would you want to see in a candidate?
Well, I think we need a little more diversity on our council. Kenny Anderson Jr. was a dear friend, and I just think we've got a lot of the same, there's the same, I don't want to say same old, but it's the people who come from the same place, business, mm-hmm. community, white, a lot of, you know, same age group. They're all kind of together in representing one segment of our community. We are more than that. So I could see someone from one of the ethnic communities running, and just to bring a different perspective to the table.
Well, you mentioned the homes along 57th Street, the nice big homes. But if you go by there in the evening, especially in the wintertime, there's nobody home. The lights aren't on, you know.
Really?
It's they're all vacationing, or they're somewhere mm-hmm. south. They're not so much in the city that much. Mm-hmm. But like I say, the population is changing, and we're certainly growing. We are being called a boom town mm-hmm. In that sense. But how do you feel about, like I say, there's the rent being gentrified, mm-hmm. as they you actually have a term for that. They're building so many apartment complexes, but the rent is going up and almost becoming unaffordable for some people.
Well, and John, let me just say, I live over by McKinnon Hospital. I mean, it's not, I live in the Bel Air edition. It's no secret where I live. But my homes are modest homes, and they would probably have been worth, like 5 years ago, maybe $160, $150. They are selling, in my neighborhood, $240,000. Now, I say bravo for these people who can get that much money, but you know what that's going to do? People, listen to me. They're working to have a 95% market value on your assessment. So if the county can come in and you got your neighbors are selling your homes for $600,000 or whatever it is, watch out. Your assessment could go up to that amount as well. And that means your property taxes likely are going to go up too. And I keep saying to them at the county, hey, when the market falls, which it will, are you going to lower our valuation so that we...
I don't think so. But they almost supposed to. Well, it's kind of like Social Security is supposed to be keeping up with the inflation, but it doesn't quite. My first home in Teresa back in 1973 was $13,000. But, of course, the interest was 9-10% back then. But like I say, the times are changing. There is inflation for senior citizens. That's a problem.
And there's senior citizens who have paid for their home early on, mm-hmm. and they've stayed in their home, and now they're being taxed out of their homes.
Being taxed, yeah.
And we've got to look at something at the state level that makes it more accessible for them to get that elderly tax freeze, and that's a whole other show. But there's certain parameters they have to meet, and they're so low that a lot of people are because the market is rising, they can't qualify. And I believe people have earned the right to stay in their own home. It's better for them, in the long run.
Yeah, there was a candidate last mayor election that ran just for that particular reason of he had a home up in the cathedral area, the historical area, and he said people had to move because, again, they were being taxed out of the area. Teresa Stately, we're talking to a former advocate, city councilor. How long, you were city councilor for how long?
4 years.
And, you worked with Kermit. Kermit was in for quite a few years before that. Is there anybody taking up your place right now? Is there anyone that's really being an advocate like you used to be?
I don't, probably not as outspoken as I was. Mm-hmm. And I'm always encouraging people to step forward. And it's hard for people to, first time I went to a council meeting, it was kind of scary. That was in 2006 with the Drake Springs pool. So, by the way, Drake Springs, we fought to keep that outdoor mm-hmm. pool. I've been going there for the noontime. They have water walking there. That is, people are loving that pool. It was a fabulous thing. They should have made the swimming pool itself bigger for the $4.7 million we allocated to it. But nonetheless, I'm just so grateful we did that, tried to save that experience for little kids in that area.
Well, Teresa, you have a lot of friends. Are your friends saying we need you back?
Well, yes, of course my friends are saying that. Yes, of course they say that.
Well, Teresa Stately, tell us again, what's the one thing that, if you were to kind of put it in one sentence, the sunset, I suppose, would be the picture, but your experience at the reservation, what's changed about you?
What's changed, I just think it developed a sense of peace and patience and inner joy of being able to be in a place and to know that I'm really helping and putting all that energy I have into helping little children who may not have anybody else giving them something, giving them love and encouragement.
Are you going to bring back your piano lessons here?
I hope to, yes. I'm always going to be teaching piano. Yes, I love to teach piano.
And for the young people, what advice can you give them that are in Sioux Falls now?
Well, you can always get involved. If you see there's a concern or a problem, get involved. If you don't try, you'll never know. But you can certainly make a difference. I've proven it in my life. And one of my pet peeves are people who just sit back and complain and don't step up and try to do something to change it.
Well,
find a solution.
Teresa Stately, we wanted to know where you're at now. We kind of do. I want to thank you very much for being with us on Forum.
Thank you so much, John.